to hell. My, my, we all go to hell. I'm writing this letter and wishing you well. My, my, we all go to hell.
Player. This is My Chemical Romance from the Black Parade. I'm just trying to stick it out through the Liza Minnelli part and we can cut it off before
this
he swears.
This song goes on forever.
And there's this whole like heavy, big, loud, crunchy part here. Can you turn that down just a hair? Thank you. So it's giving me a headache.
I know, sorry, I keep reading through your show. I keep turning up to listen to it.
There's too much rock. I'm just waiting for the... And you know that she was... You know she's never met these guys. You know she's probably never even heard this song. Like, her agent just gave her the check
right.
And a microphone and said, sing these four lines.
Okay, I'm going to have to cut it, though.
All right. You just have to turn it off.
I will. Paranoid.
All right, thank you. All right, there we go. 503-733-2970, My Chemical Romance.
I can't believe you actually let me play that.
It's a great
that's
song.
Out of, no, that's out of your comfort zone.
What do you mean?
I mean, I
because
can't believe you actually let me play
later?
A song that you know has cursing in it.
Because I'm right here. And I have,
trust me.
Because I have this big, huge dump button right next to my hand.
Oh, yeah.
Let's welcome now to the... Wait, hold on. Let me find some appropriate music. No, I got it. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show.
Do you like the Yankees?
From the Oregonian.
Or is NASCAR more?
Have you heard this? Peter Carlin from the Oregonian.
Your choice.
This is fantastic, by the way. By fantastic, I mean terrible. This is a guy.
To pick a card that shows your heart and your pride.
This is a guy at a Bank of America corporate conference singing a version of U2's One in which he extols the many virtues of Bank of America's products, including their new line of custom credit cards.
That's
he
nice.
Then name checks a bunch of undoubtedly corpulent white middle managers who were in attendance at the meeting.
Wow. I think he needs to turn on my microphone before I can really.
Oh, he's right
on?
There.
Your microphone.
Yeah, are your headphones turned up?
There's no me in my headphones.
Oh, really? Try the other.
What? Oh dear.
Are you able to hear anything? You just can't hear yourself?
Right.
Is your big complaint really, Peter, that you can't hear yourself?
I like to have more me, but now I'm all the way live.
It's so kind of a narcissistic.
That, that looks to me like a copyright infringement.
We won with affinity.
Oh jeez.
And we'll
no, it gets worse.
Carry each other.
The best part is how he's feeling it. You can look at him. You can tell, man. He's selling it.
Yeah, he is.
Okay, now this is when he starts talking about the, like, the West Coast under assistant promotion people that are there or whatever.
Oh, please don't play that again.
Wait, no, he's gonna hear it.
Have you come to me, Bruce Hammond?
Oh, okay. No, it gets worse.
Have you come to me, Liam McGee?
Oh,
have you heard about Michelle Shepard?
I wish I was dead.
She's leading the team in the Northeast.
This guy's like Satan.
And we've got Bank One.
Okay, really, honestly, I'm gonna walk.
What's in your wallet?
Okay, you're gonna hear the worst line though.
Okay.
You're gonna hear the worst line coming at that will offend all of your hippie purist sensibilities.
Gotta come out after that. All right.
It's not Capital One.
Oh yeah.
It's us. So which card are you into? Creation's never had us feeling so good, and we'll make lots of money.
Okay, I'll turn it off.
God.
I would, and look, I don't really care for YouTube, but I think there ought to be a YouTube video of Bono killing this guy.
Seriously.
Killing this guy and then
kicking his ass.
Setting his body on fire.
Every possible thing that could be wrong with that is wrong with that. And I mean, and one of those things being the fact that the guy actually sings really well and seems to have, like, he can, and he's, like, so invested
in
it.
He's feeling it.
He's totally feeling it, but what he's feeling is wrong.
Yeah, I know.
He's like he would have been a Nazi. I mean, just because to be able, and I have known nothing about his background or what, but it's like just to be able to invest yourself that much and feel that strongly about something that is completely meaningless. I mean, you take a song about which is, at least to some extent, I mean, I remember from when that song came out, it seemed to be a reaction to the AIDS crisis and this whole idea of surviving through really hideous times and shoring one another up, like with this kind of sense of brotherhood or fraternity or some sense of bonding between human beings. Like, it's the most essential, visceral feeling of love, and like this bozo turns into a song about a bank.
You nearly swore.
I really
saw you trying to make the effort.
I really was. It was all the way. It was halfway out, and then I had to reel it back in. But
there's a part early on when he's talking about the images you can get put on your credit card and show your own personality. He's like, "Do you like NASCAR?
Oh my God!"
And you know, and many people have pointed out that guy has probably practiced that in front of a mirror for like 3 years.
Seriously, you know what we need to do is get a taser gun and figure out where he lives.
And then tase him.
And then he'll know. We won't even have to say anything. We'll just walk up, look at him. Out comes the taser gun.
Do you like my taser?
Yeah, seriously. And go to the electrodes, and he's there flopping on the floor thinking, yeah, it's the song.
Like a God Part 3 kind of a thing. Yeah. Did you ever that God Part 2 song by U2?
No.
That was a really weird sentence.
Oh.
Where they mentioned Albert Goldman?
Yeah.
Instant Karma's gonna get him if I don't get him first.
Exactly.
I don't even like U2, but that offends me because that is the greatest of all U2 songs. I will say that. That is one of the most. One is maybe it's one of the best songs ever written. I mean, lyrically speaking, in the rock world, in terms of that kind of a song, I would say that one. And again, I don't like U2. I dislike Bono specifically. But
I think. To me, Bono's are, I mean, I'm not hugely into U2, and there's an element of them that I find a little sort of, sometimes a little hard to swallow, but I gotta give it up to U2. I think, and I saw them play when they were here, I think in 01, in the spring, and and I'm not that huge a U2 fan, but I thought that was a spectacular show.
But then I'm so,
and even though he is like this kind of crazed, egocentric type, let me tell you what, he's no Sting.
Well, no, he's,
he's way legit. I think that all his political stuff and all that, I think his the way he melds his political persona with his rock and roll persona.
You believe he's the genuine article?
Yeah, I do. I really do.
I will say this about U2, and I can really teasily drone on about it, so I won't. But I will say that the thing about U2 is that there's really no reason for me to dislike them. Like, all the component parts should equal something I love.
Sure.
And Bono really is, in many ways, the ultimate rock star. He is almost like he grew the ultimate rock star in a laboratory, because the things that Bono does, like, the things that make U2 so great are the same things that make them so terrible, which he is just, like, so shameless and just so...
he is just, like, his sound bites and his gestures and his phrases and his sort of imagery, it's so perfect that it just is almost, it's like when you hear something that is absolute perfect pitch and it's, like, so perfect it kind of hurts you a little bit because it's just so flawlessly done.
Yeah, see, that's what I was feeling on that My Chemical Romance tune when the background vocals came in and they're all harsh and thrashy except for the fact that they are, like, perfectly, and one suspects... digitally.
Artificially.
Yeah, digitally rendered.
Well, as I've always said, the couple Bono moments that are both great. Again, they're great and they're terrible at the same time, the way that Paul Stanley from Kiss is. Paul Stanley from Kiss and Bono are actually very similar in terms of their persona and presentation, in that they say these things, not unlike Bruce Springsteen, that are so perfect and heartfelt and just like these little fortune cookie bits of rock and roll wisdom, but they're so perfect that they kind of make you go a little bit, like when Paul Stanley does this whole rap about when introducing Rock and Roll All Night. I saw him one time on a reunion tour when they were at their apogee. You know, they were really at the apex of America embracing them again. And they're literally, once again, the biggest thing on earth. And they are a cultural force unto themselves. One can't deny that. And Paul Stanley, who I love and who I've stolen big chunks of my persona from.
Well, you are made up like a kitty cat.
Yes. He did this thing where he's... And every sentence in Paul Stanley's role begins with "people," and he said, you know, "people will." God, what did he say? This is 96, so he wasn't referencing 9/11 yet, but he was referencing something, you know. And he's talking about, it's a strange world out there, full of strange people and tough times and hard circumstances. And I'm here to remind you, and I'm paraphrasing, but it's very much like this. He goes, "I'm here to remind you this is in Salt Lake, that there is no Salt Lake City, there is no Utah, there is no United States of America, there are no countries. There is no principalities, no continents, there is no east, no west, no hemispheres, no kings, no queens. There is only one nation, and that is the Kiss Nation. And there is only one anthem of that nation." And then they just go right into Rock and Roll All Night. And it's perfect. Mm. It's a flawless little rap, but you hear it, and at the same time, you got to go, ah!
Yeah.
So it is when Bono on Rattle and Hum, and this is the best ever example.
Well, Rattle and Hum was like the low point for those guys.
When he says that crap in front of Helter Skelter about Charles Manson stole the song for the Beatles, and I'm stealing it back. And you kind of go, oh, God!
No,
it's
sort of
corny, but perfect.
See, I thought that was kind of cool. I thought that was way cooler than like them sitting by the Mississippi River. It's like, you're a bunch of Irish twits. Get the hell away from the Mississippi.
You just swore again almost.
No.
I just heard you almost swear again.
No, I was consciously, that was in the back, I knew I had to find my way through what I was going to say, and I came up with twit, which is like, kind of said the whole thing. You thought I was going to substitute another vowel in there, making you have to lunge for the dump button.
The great thing is I don't have to lunge anymore, it's right here.
Yeah.
And then there was that moment at the Super Bowl when he was literally wrapped in the flag.
It's a Super Bowl.
Literally wrapped in the American flag. And it's like, who else could do that? Who could wrap themselves in a flag on stage and get away with it? Only Bono. He's the only, and Paul Stanley. They're the only people on earth that could get away with that and not just look ludicrous. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, anyway, I like those guys. It's just,
the other bad moment in Rattle and Hum was when they do that free show in San Francisco, and he said something about rock and roll to stop the traffic. And it's like, well, you and your security guards, pal.
Seriously.
It's like,
Time Warner Films has stopped the traffic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but other than that, you know, I mean, it's like, so what? They screwed up a couple times, but then they come roaring back and they do really, really cool stuff. Not all of which I want to hear a lot, but it's just, you know, God, when you get it right. And I love me some. I think you were on the verge of disrespecting Bruce Springsteen.
No, I have never.
I love me some.
No,
Bruce Springsteen.
I have never disrespected Bruce Springsteen. I'm not like a huge Springsteen fan.
Yeah.
I'm a casual, maybe a little bit more than casual, but you know, but he's a guy I respect. He's a true believer.
Yeah.
You know, that's a guy who really, he's a guy who is, says things that other people would laugh at or find corny. Yeah. And you know that I love sincerity, you know, that I love something that irony and I are not friends. So that's the great thing about Springsteen, is that there's no, he does not have an ironic bone in his body at all. There's nothing.
So he means every word he says.
Yeah. When he says stuff like, when he says things like, what is that line? No Surrender, he says, blah, 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 get out of class, had to get away from, we learn more from a 3-minute record than we ever learned in school, which you would find cheesy from somebody else.
Right.
Like if Toby Keith were to sing that, you know, or whatever. Hey, speaking of guys like that, though, what do you make of that new Mellencamp, that incarnation? The latest, this is like a weird pod person, Mellencamp, in his place now, because he's
doing that car ad or
and
whatever.
And it's all toothless, and that new record of his is
Really?
I don't know. It's very...
It's his highest debuting record ever.
And you know what? And he ditched his backing band for it, too.
Oh. Is he now?
His backing band isn't on it. It's like the Little River Band, I think. Because I think he sent his other guys packing or whatever.
All of them? I thought they were tight as ticks.
I might be...
Because he had that guy, that drummer who...
Kenny Arnoff?
Yeah. He like went on to play with everyone. I mean, just doing between sessions and stuff. My friend, who used to be a rock critic in Indiana, had a very tortured relationship with John Mellencamp. Because on occasion, he would criticize John Mellencamp, and John Mellencamp found that unacceptable. And he described... But finally, when someone, like, he knew those guys in the band really well. Like, I think he and Aronoff were, like, really, really good pals. And finally, they convinced him, you got to talk to this guy. Like, he's the critic at the paper. He doesn't hate you. He's criticized you. But, you know, he respects you and blah, blah, blah. So he said that he walked into the studio and Mellencamp was there. And then he sat down and Mellencamp just stared at him, like, silently for minutes on end, like an unnerving amount of time. And then... began to recite to him things he had written about John Mellencamp years earlier, as though he had internalized every syllable.
As though.
Yeah.
As though. Jesus. Mellencamp seems like he's a bitter bastard. You look at him, and I mean, I love him. I love John Mellencamp, and a lot of people don't. A lot of people, that's another guy that a lot of people will smirk at if you like him. That you're only supposed to like him sort of jokingly.
No. He's written some good tunes.
He's a classic. He's one of the definitive American songwriters. There's no way, no way around that.
Well, you know, but when he said something, I remember reading an Esquire story or some magazine story about him like 15 or 20 years ago, or like 15 years ago maybe, and he was saying like, on the one hand, he was like having this weird dialogue with himself about how like, well, he thinks he's really great, he's got all these hits, he's a huge deal, you know. But then he goes, but on the other hand, I'm just a footnote to Springsteen.
Well, that's, and there's that famous Rolling Stone picture where there's, it's like the classroom.
Yeah.
And there's Dylan sitting in the front row. And, like, behind him, Springsteen is, like, looking over his shoulder.
Yeah, yeah.
And then behind him, like, Mellencamp is looking over Springsteen's shoulder. And then behind him, Bon Jovi is looking over Mellencamp's shoulder. Which
that's
is,
about right.
It's
that's
true.
Kind of about right.
All right. Should I be taking these phone calls? Or just, are these?
Scotty, he screened the first one. Go ahead.
All right. Hello, Rick Emerson Show.
Hi, how you doing?
Hi, what's up with you?
I wanted to give you a daily affirmation today.
A daily affirmation? Is this to improve my mental state?
Yeah, you know, no, I don't know if it's really going to improve anything. It depends on how you want to take it. But I think, like, you know, I've been listening to all this jargon for the last couple of days, and all these people calling in and, like, want to do this little psychoanalytical stuff with you.
Uh-huh.
I think these people are kind of full of BS, and I think they're just calling up to show off.
Okay.
Like, they're pseudo-intelligence, and I like the way you talk. I like your attitude. I like your cynicism. I like your, it's kind of like the way I look at life, you know, and then... You have your ups and downs, and I think that you just run with it. I think that people should get off your back a little bit. Stop for the figure you out.
Excellent. Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate that. That's one vote for Rick Emerson striking out of the zone of being his independent self.
There you go.
Do the listeners believe that you're not evolved?
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. That's whoever it is. Thank you, sir. It's been a bit of a week. It's been a little bit of a trying week around here.
Oh, really?
There are those who believe that Rick Emerson is, I don't know. I always feel uncomfortable. Sarah just thinks I'm having some sort of a prolonged mental breakdown.
What's the problem, pal?
I don't... See? That's what I need my shrink to say. No, seriously, just the other day I was talking about my shrink, and I said the gayest thing, which is that... It really is just like the most weirdly...
What was the gay thing you said to your shrink?
Weirdly homoerotic thing the other day. I was... No, not to my shrink. Because I'm saying for the first time I have a male therapist, because it's always been chicks in the past. So it's been skirts.
Skirts.
I've always had these bits of fluff in the past. But it's the first time I've had a male therapist, and blah, 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 blah. And that's got its own weirdness. But I was saying the thing about my therapist was that he was just like...
The most handsome man you'd ever seen in your life.
That he had a woman's hands. that he smelled of lavender. Lavender and sandalwood. I was just saying that I apologized in advance. I said this sounds really weird and queer. There's just no weird.
Did you say that really?
I did, and it does.
You know, he is so judging you right then.
I just said that I really wanted him to be a lot rougher with me. See, that's what I'm saying. See, I preface it, and people still laugh.
Well, no,
it sounds gay.
Well, no, you set it up is what you do. You the preface is what makes it funny because you're so. dancing your way into it.
Because he's just very non-judgmental. He just sits there, and I'll sit and talk, and I'll go, well, I've got all these Cub Scouts buried under my house. Yeah. And he just kind of goes, and it's not really working. You feel that that's causing discord for you.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
You know? And meanwhile, it's like I said that I want my shrink to be more like Marlon Brando talking to Johnny Fontaine. You can act like a man, slam, you know. Hollywood, whatever, Fandoncio cries like a woman.
You know, at the times I've seen a therapist, I always feel bad about talking about myself so much. I always kind of want to change the subject.
And how are you?
What's up with you? How was your week?
How are you?
And then it's a little like, because I always feel bad. It's like, well, what's going on? And you sit down and just start jabbering about yourself. It seems like you're thinking that he's secretly thinking, what a dick.
Well, you know that, and that was how I was actually. I had tried to go back to my old shrink, and she's no longer doing it. She's moved. She
committed suicide
after you.
Just a scrawled note, Emerson.
Right.
That would really f you up if your shrink killed yourself because of you. That would there'd be no coming back from that. I'm surprised that hasn't happened somewhere.
I'm sure it has.
Because it's so perverse, it seems like it has to happen. No, but she just does this like weird, this like dots are fill crap. Now with couples, and she can't help me anymore. She's no longer available to help me. But I talked to her, and she's like, well, I'm going to refer you to my colleague, John. And then she says, this is great. She goes, now you'll like him. He's really non-judgmental.
Oh.
Like, she accents that really heavily. And I, of course, immediately then took offense at that, indicating that maybe I need someone non-judgmental.
So. There's a whole segment of society that's very uptight at the whole idea that they're being judged.
Yeah.
I don't even know what that means.
Sarah's telling me that we have to break. Do we have to break? I can't go out with the bank one. Okay. We come back. I'm going to play two things
more,
for you.
No more.
No, but here's the thing. It's a study. When we come back, Peter, Carlin, Penny, Oregonian, I'm going to play two things. I'm going to play a little bit of that bank one song again.
No.
Just a little. And then I'm going to play something else, and I'm going to have you tell me which one's worse.
Okay.
All right. We're here with Peter Carlin from the Oregonian.
It doesn't involve Connie Chung, does it?
Damn you, Peter! No, it doesn't. It's something else. Back out of this is the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970, Solid State Radio. Yesterday, we can hear the Smiths today. Is this the Smiths or Morrissey?
This is Morrissey.
I wouldn't know that. I don't know. All right. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We're here with Peter Carlin, TV critic from the Oregonian. Thank you all for coming by. All right. We'll do some news here in a second, and we'll talk to Scotty J.
We've really got to get the suburban perspective.
We'll do that today. But Peter, I wanted to get your opinion on something, and then we'll take these calls, and we'll do the Scotty thing, and blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
We have two pieces of audio here, and we're trying to figure out which of these is the worst. Now, I'm going to play one. This is the Bank of America U2 song. Well, let's see if I can... I love the Steve Martin guy playing guitar.
Do you like the cowboy?
I cannot believe you're not burned out by this yet.
This is like when you can modify the car.
University.
So, you know, put your lifestyle image on your car.
Yeah, that's so rocking.
Do you like the Yankees? Or is NASCAR more your speed?
Good line there. Good.
Your choice. Your
The best part is when
you're right.
About,
yeah,
when
you're
he
right.
Talks about you make lots of money. That's the part.
That's constitutionally guaranteed that you can have your own icon on your credit card.
All right,
it
so
is, you're right.
There's that, and then there's this. This is a television weather person in North Carolina.
Jenny has traffic.
All right, I'm all nervous, but here's my rap.
I'm sorry, the television traffic girl on a television station in North Carolina.
Okay.
Jenny has traffic.
All right, I'm all nervous, but here's my rap. All right, you're gonna have a good, good drive today.
Okay.
There ain't no problems on the major roadways. Looking at country clubs, things will look pretty good like Robin Hood. Now I'm moving across the triad, yo. It ain't too bad, no.
Oh.
Now things look nice on 68, and I know you ain't gonna be late. So
okay.
That was your traffic wrap today. Man, let's get some weather from my weather girl. Austin Cabin, come on, give us a weather boy. Give it to us, word.
She doesn't really have flow, does she?
No, she can't really spit the mad.
And she calls the weather guy the weather girl.
Yeah.
He's so really happy about that.
If you really, really, where do you come down to the big Bank of America versus rapping traffic?
The Bank of America one is worse because conceptually and spiritually, because it's again, as we discussed earlier, taking a, you know, this unifying anthem about humanity and turning it into a bank jingle.
It's emblematic of all that is soulless and wrong.
Yeah. Whereas the woman from North Carolina is just a little...
She's just a hick.
Yeah, she just has no judgment.
We're here with Peter Carlin from the Oregonian. Mike, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, what's up, guys?
What's up?
Hey, I heard you about a week ago talking about the Van Halen reunion.
Yeah.
I don't know. I agree with you. It's kind of pathetic that he would have his son playing bass.
His son who's been playing bass for 3 months.
Not only is it, I thought you said six.
Well,
not only is it a, you know, long overdue, like you said, it should have happened when they released the Greatest Hits thing.
Right.
But I don't know if you know this, but at the time it was speculation, and VH1 Classic announced a couple days later that it's really happening.
That's confirmed.
But I bring good news to help those who are saddened by the horrible news that I just brought prior. And the good news is that a couple hours ago on the same channel, I saw the announcement that Andy Summers, Stuart Copeland, and Sting are currently in Vancouver, B.C., rehearsing for their After 20 Years reunion tour.
Yeah, it's going to be at the Grammys. They're going to unveil the Police and whatever the Grammys. Yeah, the Van Halen thing, let's jump over that. The Van Halen thing is the more distressing of the two.
It's totally.
Because they totally missed, you're right, the window.
Yeah.
The window was 10 years ago.
The Police have not missed a window. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I'd wait another 5 years to go see that. I mean,
don't say that, because then they'll do that, and it'll be three times as much. And, yeah.
But don't you think, I actually saw it just this afternoon on one of those BBC things, the VH1 Classics, is all kinds of old concerts, you know, back in the 70s, and I saw a concert of the Police playing in 79, and they were totally improv. I mean, just throwing out licks and stuff that aren't on the studio recordings. And if they get on stage and play half as well as they were back then, and Sting still has his range, I have a feeling it'll be a fantastic show.
I know Scotty's all pumped. Scotty, aren't you pumped for the Police?
I'm pumped for both.
All right, there you go. That's Mike. Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it. Thank you. That's Mike. Thank you. I'm not a Police fan. I know I'm supposed. There's music that I just don't feel like I've had enough college to enjoy, and that's one of them. I just don't. You know what I mean? I feel like I'm not quite bright enough for the Police. It just seems a little too. It seems needlessly complex to me. You know what I mean? And they don't talk enough about, like, you know, Rock Woman, Send Me to Hell, and so forth. That's really how that's really the kind of music.
Yeah, but that's not how Sting wants you to feel.
Yeah, I know. Oh, you know, but you know what? You know what I say that angers people is when I tell people, and I mean this quite sincerely, this is like when I say that Val Kilmer was the best Batman until Christian Bale. I say Val Kilmer was the greatest of the three first Batmans, and this friend Jason, his head just kind of goes, and he just passes out. It's like when I tell people that I prefer Sting's solo music to the Police, and then I can hear the gag reflex kind of kicking in on everybody. So these, and then we'll do the Suburban Perspective. Hello, sir.
Hey, Rick.
Hi. Hi, what's up?
Hey, I just had a comment about the spot you're running for the Rockstar Supernova.
Yes.
I know. My thoughts on it was to get one of those
trucks
that has like a PA system on top, or maybe an ice cream truck, and put Delano's Crying as the jingle and hand out F. Delano t-shirts for the show. You know, it wouldn't be costing you guys too much to do, because you only need like five or six shirts for the entire fan base for that show.
Oh, that's a bad thing to say. That's a cruel thing to say, sir. It really is tempting to go. It really is kind of... I mean, Sarah, don't you feel that way? It's sort of tempting to go just so you can... Just because you want to see how many people are there, and you want to kind of see...
I don't even know if I can handle it. It just sounds so embarrassing.
Oh,
because you know there's not going to be anybody there.
Hmm.
And they'll be... Oh.
Client alert.
Okay.
Looking at the car wreck to see if anybody's dead.
No, it's true. All right. No, it's not a bad idea. I'll pass that. I'll pass it along to Susan Reynolds in marketing.
All right.
Thank you, sir. All right. There you go. All right. Well, I think we'll be done with that for a while. We'll finish. We'll get some more calls here in a few. Ladies and gentlemen, it's that time once again. Sitting in the Tim Riley chair. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, Scotty J. It is time for Scotty J's The Suburban Perspective.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Scotty. How are you?
Doing great.
All right.
Is it a little intimidating that Peter Carlin's in here for The Suburban Perspective?
Yeah, because I'm sure he'll shake his head or roll his eyes at me or something.
All right. Scotty J, how are things? How's life?
Life is great. I really don't have a suburban perspective on anything right now.
I've had some questions from the audience. People who have new questions or follow up questions for you.
Hmm.
Which
suburb do you actually live in?
Albany.
Jesus, that's a whole other town. That's like a whole other.
Why are you lying to Peter Carlin?
He doesn't live in Albany.
Where do you live, Scotty?
I live.
Jesus doesn't like it.
We don't need
lie.
Your address. Just where?
He's not going to come stalk you.
No, I live in the Beeb.
Whoa! See you right there. That's what I'm talking about. Hey, did you discover the definition of hearsay yet?
It's something that we really cannot discuss on this show, but you can hear it.
Scotty believes that hearsay is something that you can hear but cannot say.
And only I find that amusing, by the way.
It's like onomatopoeia, only in reverse.
Totally. How about this? Did you discover the meaning of secular?
Yeah, we kind of... I was close, by the way, on that one. I was taking a guess. I said certain groups.
Secular.
Sex, you know?
Yes. Nice. What does it really mean?
It's the division between, you know, church and state type of thing.
Well, that's close enough. Thank you. You've retained about half of the dictionary definition. Well,
and, you know what? If you were to talk to me about college and all this money I paid and, you know, trying to get this job and whatnot, I don't remember anything. In fact, I barely could down a cup of coffee at that.
That's hard to believe. Christine wants to know if you've come up with any reason, if you've come up with a specific reason for disliking Hillary Clinton.
Well, I'm not a follower of their beliefs, and I don't... a real specific...
Such as, when you say you're not a follower of her beliefs.
He's a their beliefs. Who
are they?
Yeah. The demos.
And
he's into the R's because they're doing such a bang-up job over there in Iraq right now.
Oh, God, don't get me started. But anyways, one specific thing that I don't like about her is she talks like a Nazi leader.
What, German?
What do you mean, Scotty?
I mean... When she communicates, we are sick of this. We are not going to do this anymore. And just waits for the big applause. And she just makes me want to, you know, stick my finger down my throat and gag. Mm-hmm. I really have a dislike for her that I don't like.
You mask that well. When you say that you don't agree with their beliefs, what specific beliefs do you not agree with?
We go round and round about this. I believe that we are doing okay in the economy right now. The Democrats don't. I believe that we are doing everything that we can with a few mistakes that have happened in Iraq, okay?
A few mistakes?
Yes.
Like the whole reason for going there in the first place? That was kind of a mistake.
Scotty believes that we're there fighting terrorists.
But there weren't any terrorists there until we
got
there.
That's where they all are.
That's where they went when we got there.
Right, it was a place where everybody could congregate.
Well, who's congregating there, Scotty?
The terrorists.
From where?
They're coming from all around the world, actually, now.
Nowhere else.
Flying in on airplanes to get into there.
Though, I think the preferred destination now is in Afghanistan because...
Because it was a lot more sacred and quiet over there, so now they have more...
In Afghanistan? No, it's because we sort of left it kind of a mess and didn't finish what we were doing there, so then it was a lot easier for them to go back and for the Taliban to kind of retake over the country.
I heard some information that every spring the Taliban kind of comes out of their caves and they start fighting again over there
like
in
baseball.
Afghanistan.
They're like
it's like the Super Bowl for them over there.
They're like
bears. September 11th happened in September then?
Because it was like the playoffs?
It was due to a botched attempt in August.
Is that the spring?
Okay. Okay.
We have this.
Yes.
Let's see. This is from Carol. Carol wants to know. Oh, I've lost it here. Carol wants to know. Where did I put this? Carol wants to know if you know the words to the national anthem, since you are so decidedly patriotic.
Yes.
Can you recite them now?
Jose, can you see by the dawn's early night? By the dawn's early light, sorry. Well, so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and broad bright stripes, broad stripes and broad stars, I hope.
No,
I hope it's not the word.
Sorry.
Bright.
Sorry, you're wrong. Go ahead.
Whose broad stripes and bright stars.
There we go.
Don't heckle the Scotty, Peter.
So, yes, we're listening.
Now I'm lost in the song. It's kind of like
broad stripes and bright stars.
What so?
No, don't
what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming.
Wait a second here,
my God! It's like you gotta. It's almost like you gotta hear the whole song in your head or start, and you lose your place.
In baseball, well, you're looking down at a baseball diamond. Take as much time as you need.
What so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming.
Oh, my God.
It's like the
4th of July.
It's the Rosie O'Donnell pressure. Or not the Rosie, but the Roseanne Barr pressure.
Rocket's red glare.
The bomb's bursting. The rocket's red glare. The bomb's bursting in air. Gave proof to the night. through the night, sorry. That our flag was still there.
Oh, say.
You have to quit prompting. Oh, say does that star-spangled banner. Yeah, wave. See, I'm trying to think of it in my head. Jose, does that...
How's that working out?
Real bad. Can we move on?
Yes,
I know the...
It's like the last lines are the important, like the truly important.
This really
is fantastic, though. This really is a perfect... This goes hand in hand with your political beliefs, though, that... You know, really, I mean, the actual facts are really... As long as you've got the general gist.
Yes. And the thing is, I'm not as political as you might think. I just have some strong concerns about other people's beliefs.
See, I think what he's trying to say is that he has beliefs, but he has no information.
No, because facts
are dangerous. Facts are the enemy.
I have information.
Well, no, as Stephen Colbert said, the facts have a liberal bias.
Ask Scotty if he believes that Adam and Eve came before or after the cavemen.
During, I think.
Scotty? See, that is strange, because they're supposed to be first, right?
And yet...
However, learn something. I did do a little bit of research on this. That if you researched
Adam and Eve.
No, if you believe in the Adam and Eve thing, then the cavemen didn't exist.
So you believe in Adam and Eve?
Yeah.
So were Adam and Eve in caves, like, sketching drawings of buffalo and whatnot on the wall?
Well, they had to do something.
Apparently they're siblings. Artists.
Do you believe, then, that cavemen didn't exist?
See, this is where, that's why I don't talk about religion or politics very much on the Rick Emerson
show. Well, this is more of a science question. Do you believe that there were cavemen?
Well, they've found skulls and stuff. And secondly,
is that a yes?
Yes. So, everybody knows that the cavemen didn't exist during the dinosaur era as well.
True. So, you know why? Did Adam and Eve come before dinosaurs?
See, that's where it's a mix-up. You have to believe one or the other. You have to believe in cavemen.
Or dinosaurs.
Do you believe in something you have proof of or something that you don't?
Well, here's the thing on the caveman side. They've found skulls of cavemen.
Yeah.
So you can't deny it.
Well, but who are they? Pointy-headed liberal academics? You could be an honorary suburbanite, Peter. All right.
See, I'm just saying.
Probably the same guys that engineered the moon landing. Any further thoughts, Scotty?
No.
I thought you had more questions.
I wanted to talk about girls' night.
There we go. What is the suburban... let's see, we have...
What's the suburban perspective on girls' night?
Yeah, let's see. All right. So go ahead. I'm wading through these questions for Scotty. I'm looking down here at the screen. But go ahead. Because Sarah's going out on girls' night tonight. She was getting gussied up
I have my internship afterward, and I haven't taken a shower today, so I was trying to look a little more presentable.
How come you didn't take a shower today?
I was just running late.
Costs too much for water.
What is, Scotty J., what is the suburban perspective on girls' night?
Now, I can't think of a guy out there who doesn't like girls' night.
Why?
That's my perspective.
Yeah.
What are they imagining?
They're all out there having fun.
Without the guys, though. So it seems.
Wouldn't they be all sexy like?
That's without the guys, but.
Sort of having cat fights and stuff.
You know, not that.
Wrestling and Jello.
That's what girls do, isn't it?
Not that this is important to me because I'm very happily married, but however, when they're having girls' night, that's the
challenge.
Where's
your wedding ring, Scotty?
I haven't worn it for the last year because my finger is fat now.
We have this. Somebody sent a follow-up question about Adam and Eve. What is the suburban perspective on Noah's Ark? Does Scotty believe Noah's Ark is a real story?
Yes.
Their follow-up question, then, is were there dinosaurs on Noah's Ark?
No.
So,
see, all I know is what was taught to me as a child, and I haven't really, like, opened up the Bible and read from start to finish. Just what they tell you, you know, in Sunday school and whatnot.
Okay. There you go, ladies and gentlemen, Scotty J with the suburban perspective. Thank you so much, Scotty.
You're welcome.
And there we go, and we're done. Peter Carlin, hello, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
All right. Let's do a couple of these, and then I have, I want to talk. I have some TV questions as well. So, by the way, if you have TV thoughts, observations, questions, queries, we're here with Peter Carlin from the Oregonian. Hello, sir. Who is this?
Hi. This is Mark.
Hi.
I'd like to make a comment pertaining to Anna's song.
Yes.
They tend to overdress her a bit. Sometimes she will show her just below the chin, but eventually they'll probably have her like in a burqa or with just a head sticking out of a pile of coat.
I have no idea what's going on. Sometimes they dress her just below the chin, but what?
And is Scotty out of that new sounder yet?
Thank you.
All right.
I don't understand what's going on there. Hello, Rick Emerson Show. Who's this? Hello. And Curtis. All right, that was. I got a whole lot of nothing there. All right, Peter Carlin, what's going on in the television world?
What do you want me to say? I can tell you what I've been watching.
I don't know.
There's tons of stuff on TV.
We can talk about Joe Biden instead.
Joe Biden has got some.
We can talk about
time to fold up the tent. Yeah, I know. That was a bad. But you know what? Better sooner than later.
He's never going to win anyway. I was talking to somebody at CNN about this. I remember Joe Biden running for office when I was like 10. I remember Mark Russell making Joe Biden jokes when I was growing up, when I was in grade school.
Well, he ran for president in 1980.
Yeah. And those guys, they got to just run for president every now and again to, like, impress their friends.
Well.
Because there's no way that they're going to win. I mean, if your name is Barack.
Well, Chris Dodd is running, I think. Chris Dodd. I mean, he's been a solid, he's been a fixture in the Senate for 20 years or whatever, but you just don't think of him in terms of, like, your dynamic national political presences.
No, it's true. What do you think of the Hillary Clinton presidency?
You know something? I'm not a huge Hillary fan, per se. I mean, in the sense that I think she's smart, and I think she'd probably be a really good president, but I don't see her getting elected, and one reason why is because... I feel like I should like her more. But on the other hand, you know, it's like compared to the other people who have been or
will who
currently are president, it's just like you think like, well, you know, at least you get the sense that she's more involved in information than in beliefs. But, I find her a difficult media presence. Let's define it that way. I find that there's a certain sort of, as opposed to Barack Obama.
The camera doesn't like her.
The camera doesn't like her, and she just doesn't, the warmth, which I understand that she can be very warm and very funny, but that never really comes across. You know, as a public persona, she's just... I don't know. There's not as engaging and as dynamic as one might like.
The thing you say that even when she tries to be funny or warm, it doesn't really work. Actually, the thing she said the other day about the experience with evil men. Somebody asked her the other day. She was in a press conference the other day, and they were talking about Osama bin Laden. And they said, you know, do you think you have the strength, you know, the stones, basically, you know, the Thatcher-esque stones to hunt down evil like Osama bin Laden? And she said, well, look at my background. She said, don't you think I have experience dealing with evil men?
Whoa!
And there was this big applause, but the thing is, it just didn't come across as funny. It just came across as really bitchy. So you're right that she has a
but that's a weird sort of. Paleolithic way of defining, like, a, you know, an aggressive woman.
Oh, it doesn't matter to me.
But
no, no,
like,
but I'm saying from the American, from the suburban perspective.
Right.
From the Scotty J perspective, that's the problem for her.
Well, yeah, but that comes down to real, I mean, I remember, I never forgot some clown, I can't remember, like, the very early Clinton administration days, right after he made Janet Reno
Attorney General.
Thank you. I was going to say district attorney, but I knew that was wrong. Attorney General. And I remember hearing some guy, you know, some cracker-sounding guy, sorry, but it was
crude. Cracker-sounding guy.
Just saying, like, and he was one of these survivalist sort of, like, militia dudes.
Oh, he's a Montana militia?
Yeah. Kind of that, and that was sort right of a guy. And he was saying, like, you know, if she comes over here, she's going to have herself a hell of a bad hair day. And I remember thinking, like, okay, so the problem is that, you know, your most fundamental problem with her is that she's a woman.
Right.
And it's like, you can have a million problems with her, but it's like that one's the one that you're at least not supposed to own up to in quite such a vivid way.
Well, and again, I don't have any problem with it. I've said repeatedly that a Hillary Obama ticket and a Hillary Obama victory would be fantastic for me because you could hear my in-laws dying from here.
Yeah.
I mean, I have this great idea for a Barack Obama, like a viral campaign ad, like one of those YouTube ads, and it's just this. It's just like some Pleasantville music like we use there for the suburban perspective, and it's black and white, and it's like at a kind of an upscale sort of wealthy kind of big mansion house, and you see the door opening, and like an Orville Redenbacher looking guy comes to the door, leans down in the morning, picks up the morning paper, and he just sees the, you know, nation elects first black and female president, vice president, and then he just dies.
Yeah.
And then he just tags with, like, you know, kill an old white man.
My feeling, though, is that we've had thousands of years of men essentially running the planet. Maybe it's time to take a rest. I say 100 years, and it's essentially constitutionally illegal around the planet for men to run the world.
Scott, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Rick, love the show. I can't hear it while I'm on hold.
That'll be fixed by tomorrow.
Cool. Peter, what happened to Carnivore? Why do you think HBO took it off the air? It was a really great show, I thought.
I'm sorry, which show are we talking
about? Carnivore.
Carnivore. It was weird. I didn't like it so much. I sort of thought it was, and I think basically the problem with the show was that not enough people were watching, which is why they always take anything off the air. That show in particular, I watched a lot of it, and I had a really hard time getting my arms around it. It was a little like John Steinbeck on acid, you know, like having some sort of hallucination. And it just, there were elements of it that were really cool, but ultimately I found it, hard to drag myself to. The one show, though, just to sort of change the subject.
All right. Scott, thank you.
Yeah.
I don't think I'll
anyway.
Scott, there you go.
Yeah. The one show that I absolutely am in love with now, I've been watching kind of nonstop, which is one reason why I was struck dumb by your asking what's on TV. It's because all I've been watching are DVDs of this Canadian show called Slings and Arrows.
Which I've never heard of.
Well, you've got to go dig it up. You have Netflix or whatever?
I kind of canceled it.
Just get the first season or whatever. Just go to your favorite online retailer or whatever and drop the $20 to get the DVDs for the first season. But it's actually co-created and co-written by Mark McKinney, who used to be in Kids in the Hall,
right,
a bunch of other people, a woman named Susan Coyne and some other folks. And it's about this theater company in Canada, the New Burbage Shakespearean Festival. And they're each season is six episodes long, 6 hours long. And it's just about their sort of flailing attempts to stage their season, but it's full of like really cool characters. And the artistic director at the beginning of the first season ends up dying and haunting the theater.
Fantastic.
And so he won't leave the new artistic director alone. And so there's all these, he's constantly coming up and giving him advice.
Well, Sarah and I were talking about this. I don't think I watch anything current on television except for The Wire. I think that's it. I'm not currently watching anything.
But if you get the Sundance Network, the third season of Slings and Arrows is going to start on Sundance in a couple weeks. But anyway, you really got to go back and watch season one and two. But it's just a brilliantly observed show, and it's a hour-long show, which is, believe it or not, not about a hospital and not about crime.
And, yes, and not about an attorney.
Yes.
Let's do two more real quickly, and then we'll wrap it up. John, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick, I just wondered, you guys knew what was going on at 9:10 a.m. when the DJs got fired, and I just flipped over to it a minute ago, and it's all talk radio. It's like Michael Medved, that creepy moralist.
Fantastic.
I think he goes over big in the suburban.
I was just going to say, I'm sure they'll get a 50 share in Scotty's head.
Hey, look it up for me. Let me know tomorrow, would you?
Well, I think the station got sold. And
information. The information is that station was hemorrhaging money. So that's the hemorrhaging money. And, of course, they solved that the way they always do, not by holding the management who made those poor decisions accountable, but by firing the DJs.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the internal memo that we got from Entercom said, quote, "We just can't figure out a way to stop losing money on this station."
Right.
So there you go. So that's what happened to that.
And I believe they sold the station.
And they sold it. They don't even own it anymore. That seems like the sort of thing that Sarah and I especially should be taking grim pleasure in, but I'm just over it. You know?
Well, I called you when I found out.
Sarah did. Sarah called me last night.
Christian's going off the air.
You know? Just,
at midnight.
I know, which is, you know, yeah. The thing is, I just sort of knew it was going to happen. I mean, nobody effed them but themselves, so, you know, whatever. Let's do one more here, and then we'll button it up, as they say. Jerry, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick, how you doing?
What's up?
I think it's only fair that since Scotty has his suburban perspective, you should have, like, the city perspective or the Emerson perspective.
That's the rest of the program.
I mean, either that or just let Scotty have some fun with it. I mean, you know, there's probably 25 bazillion Rick Emerson soundbites, you know.
Scotty, what would you ask me for Rick Emerson's urban perspective, Rick Emerson's city perspective?
Well, I'd ask you,
why do you hate America?
Yeah, why do you hate America and your president so much? And explain what he has done that is so wrong.
Oh, that's going to last for hours.
You
know.
Seriously, are you really honestly going to ask that?
No.
Okay, thank you. I didn't think so. All right, appreciate that. All right, thank you.
I think sometimes hating the president is actually loving America.
It's true.
It depends on who the president is.
Scotty,
it allows you to exercise your rights and feel like it's.
He said, "I like how he said he put sort of audible quote marks around rights."
You should have seen the other day when we were talking about the Constitution. I asked him if he thought health care was a right, and he said I think the conclusion that Scotty came to was that health care was not a right, but that it was something everyone was entitled to. And then we were talking about the Constitution, and I said I believe the Constitution, the preamble called for the government to protect us from the common common foes and blah blah blah. The general defense, the general welfare, and Scotty did agree that that was in there, but said that it wasn't really applicable because the Constitution was thousands of years old and might not apply
from Adam and Eve's time.
Might not apply
and
to
the cavemen
to today's society. All right, I haven't read today's Oregonian. Do you have a column in today's Oregonian or
no?
Well, there you go.
Yes, Thursday.
What a time saver that was just now.
Yeah.
What is coming up in the Oregonian?
You mean like in my thing? I did a thing about Lost because Lost is coming back next week. And guess what? Lost's next episode is called Not in Portland. And part of it revolves around Portland, Oregon.
Really?
I kid you not. Flashback.
Have you seen it? Is it good?
I've seen it.
Hey, when is The Shield coming back?
April. For the penultimate season. There'll be one more season after this.
I just hope they don't. I hope it doesn't suck. I just hope it doesn't suck.
Well, I had a long conversation with Michael Chiklis in L.A. last month, and he was all fine.
Oh, you saved the most interesting part.
That's a guarantee. Are you going to be reporting now that? Are you going to be writing about it?
No.
Well, then hell, then we're going to talk about that next week.
Okay.
No, seriously, because
you need to come in studio, Peter. It's so much better.
You're so much better in the studio.
Yeah, I know, but the studio is a long walk from my office.
But I have to try. All right, baby. You're an American. Drive here.
Yeah.
Great. Just trying to be part of the problem.
I'm giving you the urban perspective, which is where I walk.
All right. Peter Carlin, read him in print in the Oregonian, online at OregonLive.com. The Rick Emerson Show, produced today and every day by the lovely and talented Sarah F. Dillon for AM 970 Solid State Radio. Tim Riley, sometimes in the newsroom, not today. Today, the newsroom and the PA, Scotty J. We want to thank Lisa Goddard, Jim Roop. Tomorrow, Scott Dallas from BillBeaverRadio.com. Dave Zinn is the Rick Emerson gatekeeper. Thank you for listening. Don't let the bastards run it down. See you all tomorrow. Like us next. Bye now.
Are you running late?